This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, which also happens to be a 10th episode. Those of you who subscribe regularly to the podcast know that every 10th episode, Jason goes off topic and brings you something outside of the real estate space that actually affects the real estate space in the long run. Of course, Flashback Friday is your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Hey, welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman. Thank you so much for joining me for another amazing episode. And we're glad you're here. We appreciate your listening and we appreciate all of our new listeners. The show is growing nicely. You know, we've been doing this for a long, long, long time. Back since the days of podcasting was like, I think dinosaurs roamed the earth back then when we started. So we've been on the air for what, 9 years with this show? Something like that. Something around 9 years, maybe almost a decade. Have to have a big celebration when we figure out when our decade anniversary is. But I'm here with Naresh today, and we've got a few things to talk about from a prior episode and a few new things. And let's jump into it. Naresh, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Jason. Really enjoying this summer Florida weather.
I think you're being sarcastic. Is it totally humid there?
You know what? Here's what I tell people, because for some reason, people in Florida think the summers are brutal.
Well, that's what everybody thinks about Phoenix. And they're just crazy, by the way. Since I lived in San Diego for the last 3 months, and I've lived in SoCal all my life, I got to tell you, these people just do not get it. Phoenix has the world's best weather 8 months of the year. Maybe Florida does too. I don't know. Tell me.
Well, I'm curious to hear about the Phoenix summers, but in Florida, it rains a lot here. And I really enjoy the summers. And it only rains in the summers. That's what it feels like almost.
But isn't it just like terribly humid? I mean, I'm not a humidity guy too much. I think San Diego's too humid.
It's humid, but it's not. I've experienced worse heat, worse summers. I think the Florida summers where I am in Tampa are better than the Northeast summers in New York City and upstate New York and Baltimore. A few weeks ago, it was what, early August? It was in the 60s at night. I mean, where can you find a place that's 60?
You can find that in San Diego, but okay. But for a lot more money, and you have, you know, huge state taxes, and you don't have good asset protection laws and all that kind of stuff. So Florida is very desirable for a lot of reasons. A lot of beautiful places in Florida. You know, we make it a point not to do a lot of small talk on the show, by the way, just so you know, that's actually part of our philosophy, is that we get into the actual topic, which you know we do, but do allow us a little small talk here, listeners, because I, you know, this is kind of interesting. Well, at least to us. Maybe not to you. Sorry. But yeah, so great evening weather. But in the daytime, is it pretty bad in the summers there?
Again, I think it's better than what I experience in the Northeast. I have no complaints about the weather. Does it get up to the 90s? Yes, it gets up to the 90s. Or do you feel hot sometimes? Yes, you do. But it's summer in the United States. Kind of, what do you expect? The winters are awesome. The winters, you get down to the 50s at night, sometimes the 40s when it gets really cold. But that's living in the Northeast for so long, that this weather to me is awesome.
Yeah, well, that's why people, you know, leave the New York area. And for those of you who don't know, Naresh used to be part of the vast Wall Street conspiracy. Naresh was a a racketeer, part of the, you know, modern version of organized crime. I'm, of course, joking, Naresh. I don't mean to say that you were, you were actually an ex-con or something. You were just a young guy that went to Duke and got a really good education. And you know, you always saw yourself working on Wall Street. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I could talk about this for a while. It's almost like it was another life. Because when you go to, I guess when you just live in that area, it doesn't even matter where you go to school, but when you live in that area, you kind of get brainwashed. You're introduced and exposed to the financial industry. You have all these recruiters from these huge companies coming to your school talking about how much money you're going to make, how the work-life balance is. I mean, most of them are lying to you. Now, you have to remember, a lot of this was being done, or I went to school before the financial crisis hit. So maybe things were different before 2008, but it's almost every business student's dream to work on Wall Street. Just the glamour of it, not even the money aspect of it, just the glamour of it being affiliated with these big companies. Morgan Stanley, at the time, Morgan Stanley, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs. It was just a dream, and it's super, super competitive to get in. Even if you start off in the back office, everything is so competitive. The interviews are stringent. You're competing against hundreds of other candidates. You're interviewing with up to 10 different people in one day.
10 different people for one company? Like if,
oh yeah.
So, okay. Give us what company?
So I'll give you an example of, it's called a super day, and I had several of these super days for different banks, but I remember one the most. It was when I interviewed at Morgan Stanley for a fixed income sales position. So it was actually,
a bond salesman.
Well, this was actually, I think it was a mortgage-backed security type of sales position.
Okay. Those could have been bonds or equity, though, but go ahead.
Yeah. So first you go through the standard kind of phone interview and all that. Then you get invited to the super day if you made it past the phone interview. They fly you to New York City. And I remember they put me up in the Hudson Hotel, which is, I think it's like a $500 a night type of hotel.
So a swanky hotel, okay.
So a swanky hotel.
Of course, swanky is the word, folks.
Right, and then they pay for everything. So for all your meals, your taxis, whatever. You show up, and when you're waiting downstairs in kind of the waiting area, there were probably about 15 other kids there waiting with you, all from different schools.
And when you say kids, they're 22 years old, 24 years old. What are you talking about?
Yep. So these are people who are, the age range is probably 21 to 25. So it's a mix of undergrad students and graduate students. The focus, kind of the majors and the areas of focus are very different. So I remember meeting kids who were like art history majors, economics majors, engineering majors, just all sorts of different backgrounds.
I would think there would be a lot of like engineering and physicists. And, you know, it reminds me from the great line from that movie. God, what's the movie called? It escapes me now. But I think Margin.
Call.
Yeah, Margin Call. Thank you. That was such a great movie, by the way. Folks, you should all see that movie. I talked about it before when I saw it a few years back on the show. And, you know, this kid who goes in to meet the owner of the company, and I think they were really profiling Lehman Brothers. Like, if I had to say, you know, that was about a certain company, it was probably about Lehman. Do you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. I think even in the description, it says that it was loosely based off Lehman Brothers.
Yeah. So this kid, just to tell you about the movie, he basically figures out that they've got a problem, okay, that they're completely overextended. He's like a risk manager guy, and he figures out that there's a huge problem and the company's basically going to go down. And so at 3 in the morning, the CEO flies in on a helicopter or something like that and meets with him and says, what's going on? And they're just completely nervous. They know, you know, disaster is around the corner. And he says, so Kid, the CEO guy, says, you know, Kid, what's your background? You know, why do you know this? Like, he's questioning his qualifications. And he says, well, I basically did my doctoral thesis on, propulsion of rockets and this or that. And he says, so basically, you're a rocket scientist. And he goes, yeah, the money's just so much better on Wall Street. And that to me is a sad thing, because rocket scientists actually invent things and do real tangible things that move humanity forward. Wall Street just plays with things, readjusts and renames things, and creates financial innovation, you know, which is whenever, like I always say, whenever you hear that phrase, run for the hills, because you know a disaster is looming. And they just figure out how to move money from one party to another. Just a reminder, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and every Wednesday.
Yeah, well, that brings up a good point, because most people, in fact, all the people, I have many, many friends on Wall Street, people who I worked with in the past, people who I went to school with. And when we grow up, when we're kids, when we're children, you go to any elementary school and you ask the kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Not a single person is going to say, I want to work on Wall Street. I want to be a bond manager or an M&A advisor or whatever it might be. It's not mainstream. It's not fun. But once you get into school, once you get into college, these recruiters start coming, you see alumni go off, start working on Wall Street, you see the money, and everything changes. Everything changes. So in that movie, that guy probably did want to become a rocket scientist and do all these cool things. But then those recruiters come to your school, they give you an exam. Some of them will give exams to kind of gauge the talent pool and see who might be a good fit. They give you an exam, and then they just recruit the heck out of you, and then they throw six figures right out of school at you. When I was there, the starting salaries, if you were going to do sales and trading or investment banking, they were about $80,000 base, and then on top of that, you were eligible for a bonus at the end of your first year of up to about $70,000. And these were at the better, you know, the Goldman Sachs.
So 150 grand and you're 22, 24 years old.
Right, wow. Right, 150 grand. And then generally you start out as a two-year analyst, and it's almost kind of like a very expensive two-year internship. And if you're good, if they like you, then you get promoted up to either a third-year analyst, a senior analyst, or you get promoted up to an associate. And if you get promoted up to associate, then the jump in pay goes from about $180,000 from your second year to close to $250,000 as an associate.
Unbelievable. That's just insane. I mean, granted, that doesn't go as far in a place like the People's Republic of New York, the Socialist Republic of New York, but, you know, it's still amazing. But, you know, Naresh, see, you said something that was kind of telling I should comment on, is that, you know, no kid says they want to go work on Wall Street, because the innocence and purity of a child, you know, they want to make something. They want to do something. I mean, every kid says, I want to be a firefighter, or at least every boy kid, probably, you know, yeah, that's like a common thing, or an astronaut,
yeah,
or something like
astronaut.
That. Yeah, and me, it was astronaut too. That's funny you say that, because I was a complete space cadet when I was a kid. I used to follow the space program, you know, with a lot of zeal. And, you know, when we become adults, I mean, admittedly, this happens to all of us to some degree or another, right? I mean, maybe not all of us, but a lot of us. And, you know, we start to kind of sell out on doing something real, something we're really, truly passionate about. Now, I'm glad to say that I don't feel that way, although, you know, some of the stuff I actually do in my life every day is kind of like, you know, a hassle, and I should probably delegate more and so forth. But you know, like overall, I feel like I have a mission, and I'm just so grateful for that. And I know that a lot of people listening don't feel that way, because believe me, our client base is largely made up of people who want to invest in income property and build a portfolio because they want to leave their corporate job, because it's out of alignment with their idea. So at whatever age you've discovered that this is out of alignment, like probably for the first 10 or 15 years of your career, you know, like many people and like me getting into real estate. I mean, the reason I wanted to get into real estate, I wanted to make money. I grew up poor and, you know, I didn't like being poor. It was no fun, you know? So I wanted to make money, but as it evolved, it became a mission, you know, something that was really important to me. And I just really love to create and do cool things in the world, you know, kind of reminds me of that Steve Jobs quote about how he wanted to leave a dent in the world or the universe. I'm not exactly sure of the exact quote, but that's the concept of it. And so hopefully with what we're teaching you here on the show and at our live events and so forth, which by the way, we have our Venture Alliance event coming up in Providence and Newport, Rhode Island at the end of September. It's going to be stunning. You can go to jasonhartman.com and click on the events section to find out more about that, but it's just going to be an awesome event. A great weekend there. And we're going to do a side trip to Martha's Vineyard as well. So that's going to be really great. But with the stuff we do, hopefully we can help you bring your life back into alignment with what you want to do. And for many of us, I remember a gentleman at our last Venture Alliance meeting. He's one of our clients. And I can't remember how many properties he's purchased. I want to say like 8 or 10 now. You know, he's a great guy, a tech guy, you know, works up in Silicon Valley. And he talked a lot about how he wants to start a business. And, you know, the business a lot of times is the thing that, you know, you're passionate about. Like it's the thing you want to do in the world. But in order to be able to have that freedom to start the business, and hopefully the business doesn't become a ball and chain, right? But in order to be able to have that freedom to start the business, you got to take your corporate career and invest that money and make it grow so that you have that, you know, that base of the pyramid, if you will, that foundation. Who was it? Henry David Thoreau, I believe, who said, it's okay to build castles in the sky, but, you know, you got to put them on a foundation. Or boy, I'm a bastard. I ruined that quote, just so you know. Don't build them on sand or something like that. But, you know, and this income property gives you that foundation to go do what you want to do. It's the most historically proven asset class in the world. So that's the thing, you know, that you dangle that money carrot in front of people. And, you know, I can totally see what you're saying, Naresh, about how all these young kids in college would just want to just run over and, you know, do that. And they don't really think about the morality of it, or, you know, it just kind of doesn't occur to you. It seems so big. This institution is so big. How can it be immoral? You know, how can it be wrong what Wall Street does? But I think everybody's kind of getting wise to it.
Yeah. When you're that young, all you're focusing on is trying to get a job out of school and trying to make it through those interviews. So you have no idea how the machine operates, what you're going to be doing. You don't even think about that stuff. You're just so caught up on trying to land that job, which is so difficult to do.
Yeah, it really is. Okay, so at the risk of being on another tangent here, we left off on the last episode with some of the stuff we wanted to talk about. I know, one, we were running over time. We're trying to keep these episodes a little shorter, kind of in line with the average commute time in America. Hopefully we can help you end that commute, though, with financial freedom with real estate investing. Naresh, there were a couple things. I think China and gold and how it relates to real estate investing.
Sure. So one of the things is gold, and gold hit about $1,100 an ounce recently, and that's where it's been hovering over the past month or so. And it's funny because the gold bugs are still saying, you know, gold 2,000, gold 5,000, whatever crazy thing they might continue to say. And gold has just been going down, just down, down, down over the past 4 years.
You know, I was talking this weekend. Now, you know, we got to also talk about these massive gyrations in the stock market too, because, I mean, you know, Harry Dent is predicting, what, Dow 2000, I believe. He's predicting gold at 750, then 250. I mean, massive reductions. But I was talking this weekend, I was at a real estate conference, and I was talking with a couple of people about this concept, about how Generation Y, you know, that is really going to ultimately become the big economic force in the country, 80 million Americans, the largest demographic cohort in U.S. history, slightly larger than the baby boomers. I don't think they really care about gold and silver and precious metals. You know, they're more into technology and a little bit into real estate for sure. I mean, we've definitely got a lot of Gen Y clients. Most people kind of don't wake up to a lot of this stuff until they're about 35 or 40, maybe even 45. You know, maybe Alan Greenspan was right when he said gold is a barbarous relic. I don't know. I hate to say he was right about anything except Keynesian economics and creating inflation, but you can talk all you want about the past 5,000 years and stuff like this. You know, it's certainly not an industrial metal. I don't know. I think it's highly overrated. There's a great article on my blog at jasonhartman.com about the 7 reasons real estate is better than gold. You can just type that in on the search bar at jasonhartman.com, or you can actually just do it on a search and you'll find it as well. 7 reasons real estate is a better investment than gold. And it doesn't have financing. Income property does. It's the most debt favored asset. So you can get a lot of leverage. Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and I'll move the entire world. It's the banker's favorite thing to loan against is real estate. It has no tax advantages. In fact, it's very highly taxed because precious metals are taxed as collectibles at, I believe, 28%. I always like to make the disclaimer, I'm not a tax or legal advisor, so check out what I say. And in contrast with, you know, real estate, there's no income potential. You can't rent out your gold. I don't know of anybody who rents gold from people. It's subject to confiscation. I mean, you know, you think, oh, well, that's just crazy conspiracy theory, but it already happened in 1933. And then, you know, all the gold bugs, the promoters out there will say, well, you know, we have these certain coins that are non-confiscatable. Well, what do you mean? I mean, tell that to the government. The government can do whatever they want. And of course, you might be listening to this thinking, well, Jason, they can confiscate our real estate too. Well, yeah, you're right. If we go into just complete communism and anarchy, you're right about that. That's certainly a very distant possibility. But with the real estate, hopefully you've only got 20% skin in the game and you've borrowed the other 80%. So if they were to confiscate or somehow damage the value of, or the income potential of, or the investment quality of the real estate, you know who they'd really be hurting? All the banksters. Okay, all the bankers. And banksters is a sarcastic term, you know, like the mobsters, the banksters. They'd be hurting them. And that's, you know, the Wall Street and bankers and the big corporatocracy, that's who owns and runs the government. Okay, you know, both people on the right and the left of the political aisle will agree with that. And they're not going to hurt them. And so if they do attack this asset class, it's mostly financed by banks and Wall Street. And that's who they're going to hurt. Okay, because your implicit guarantee, as I always say, the best insurance is a high loan balance. Your implicit guarantee is to do what millions and millions of people did very recently, and some are still doing. You can walk away. That's the backdoor nuclear option. And you've only got maybe 20% skin in the game. 80% of it is the bank's risk, not yours. Okay. You know, there's just so many things. It's not as manipulatable as the precious metals. Go to GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee website. I believe that's GATA.org. It's just a myth. I just don't get these gold bugs. We've done many shows on this, as I talked about on the last episode when we were recording, and I've gone into this topic deeply. But I do think it's worth looking at gold as a measuring stick, because it is a bit of the canary in the coal mine for inflation.
Remember, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and Wednesday.
I'm not a gold bug by any means. I do think it's a good wealth preserver if bought at the right price for certain reasons. So gold is a physical asset, kind of like real estate, as you mentioned. But what a lot of people, and I know this, you know, as a fact, but what a lot of people do is they'll buy their gold and then they'll store it offshore and kind of use it as a tax saving vehicle or even an asset protection vehicle. So if there's a divorce or a bankruptcy or whatever it might be, well, there's that gold that's hiding thousands and thousands of miles away overseas.
Yeah, and I think that one is a dangerous mentality too. And I've covered that subject about these companies that say they'll keep your gold in a vault. First of all, how the hell do you even know it's there? Number one, you know, it's supposedly you got a couple of gold bars with your name on it in some commingled vault. And, you know, if it's the end of the world scenario you're worried about, then don't you think these companies will just take that gold for themselves and the people that promote this stuff? I mean, there have been so many scams around the gold industry like that, that I just, you know, and if you think you're going to hide it from your spouse, first of all, that might be illegal. Okay, number one, it's probably better than paper money. If the paper money is in a small country that is not backed by the largest military the human race has ever known. People that say, well, gold, you know, the dollar isn't backed by anything. It's fiat money. Well, yeah, you're right in like concept. It's not backed by gold. I totally get that rationale. But it's backed by aircraft carriers and nuclear submarines and armies and the biggest military the human race has ever known. And I know that may sound ugly, but it's just a fact of life.
Yeah, my problem with gold is, number one, you're never going to be able to buy it at its spot price because these dealers are going to mark them up. So already these markups can rip you off. Secondly, storage is a huge pain in the butt. So if you have gold, well, why would you want to store it at home? Because that's going to open up the liability of theft and burglary, especially if people know you have it there.
And by the way, I will tell you that happened to my grandfather and grandmother. My grandfather was a coin collector. And, you know, people knew that. And they had a home invasion robbery before you even heard the term home invasion robbery. They had a dog. They, you know, lived on a farm in upstate New York and had a gun at every door, a rifle. There was a rifle literally by every door in that house, just with no lock on it, no nothing. I remember going over there as a little kid. You know, nowadays, boy, that would, I'm sure, be very illegal. But back then, you know, it was a different world. You know, there was a rifle sitting fully loaded by every door, okay? And my grandfather and my great uncles taught me how to shoot, you know. And one day, someone came to the door. Two men came with guns. And my grandfather came to the door and opened it to say hi. And they barged their way in with guns. And the dog came at them. They hit the dog on the head with the butt of one of the guns. They tied my grandfather and grandmother up, stole all the coins and some other things. And, you know, they finally escaped being tied up and walked down the dirt road to their neighbor's house. And that, I mean, you know, that's a very dangerous thing. So do not keep this stuff in your house. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm of Indian descent, and we Indians are known to have a lot of gold because for cultural reasons, not for really any investment reasons. And you go to any major city, and there's a good chance over the last 5 years, there have been major home invasions of Indian people's homes. My parents fell victim to it. Many of our friends, they fell victim to it. And, you know, going back to what I said earlier, but you buy this gold, if you're going to buy it as an investment, you now own it, but where are you going to put it? So you can't put it at home, which is dangerous.
And you also kind of can't put it in a safe deposit box very safely, because there are all sorts of possibilities, and I've had guests on the Holistic Survival Show that are these gold bug people, you know, Howard Ruff. Well, Howard Ruff, I actually think we played him on the Creating Wealth Show. He's probably the world's biggest gold bug, potentially. And supposedly, the government has the right to just confiscate what's in your safe deposit box, and, you know, you're just, and if there's a bank holiday, you know, they're going to close the banks, and you're not going to be able to get to your safe deposit box. And, you know, that's sort of the end of the world kind of scenario, but yeah, there's just... So, you know, Howard Ruff says buried in your backyard. Okay, that's what he says. I guess we all know it's in Howard Ruff's backyard, folks. So, and there's a tip for you.
Yeah, and then if you want to store it in these professional vaults, these highly secured vaults, you do the math, and at the end of it
it's
all...
It's expensive!
Exactly. You do the math, and at the end of it all, you've lost money on your investment, even if gold goes up.
The storage could cost you a fortune. I've looked at those things. It's very expensive. The other thing is, the company running that vault can just take off with your gold. I mean, you know, it's like, really, folks, this just doesn't work. But listen, I don't think we need to belabor it too much because all our listeners are listening because they probably love income property and they probably don't need to be convinced of this. So let me just give you an example of a property here. Here's a great property at jasonhartman.com/properties, okay? I mean, we've got many of them there, of course. This is just one of, you know, dozens, if not hundreds. I don't know how many we have on our site. But $68,900, okay? Subject to qualifying with 25% down, you need about just over $20,000 to acquire this asset. Projected rent, $825 per month. And your cash flow total annually after everything, management fees, everything, projected at $2,520 per month. And that would give you a cash-on-cash return of 12% annually. And overall, if the asset appreciates, it, you know, what most people consider to be the historical national average of around 6%. And, you know, you can do this yourself and impute different numbers, you know, higher, lower, whatever you want. Run your own scenarios, okay? And that's what we do at the Jason Hartman University event, is we really dive into how to do the numbers, like the fundamentals of that. Overall return on investment projected at 36% annually. And that is possible. I know that sounds crazy, but it's a multi-dimensional asset class. So you make your money from so many different dimensions of the asset, from cash flow, from leverage, from appreciation, from tax advantages, and not the least of which, inflation-induced debt destruction, which I've talked about in prior episodes. So that's why it's the most historically proven asset class in the world. You know, so check out the properties at jasonhartman.com in the properties section and let us know how we can help you, because income property is the best thing since sliced bread. But, you know, sliced bread's not, bread's not too good for you. So I like it though.
Oh yes. Yeah. Yummy, yummy. I'm a fan of bread. I'm a carb guy.
It's not very good for your health. Yeah. We got to wrap up. What do you want to talk about on the next episode when you're back, Naresh? You want to talk about China a little bit and what that means to real estate investors and so forth?
Sure. Yeah. Let's talk about China. Let's talk about these crazy market gyrations, which I think is just, an ephemeral type of thing. I don't see this big crash that Harry Dent is predicting, but I also don't see Dow 20,000 like other guys are predicting as well. This is just part of any market cycle. It's part of it. It happens once every 6 months or so. So we're going through it right now.
Yeah. And we're going to do some interesting future episodes about inflation, deflation, stagnation, and robotics and technology and how that influences them. I know we've talked about that many times, but I've got some really good new thoughts for you folks. So stay tuned for that. There's some good new thinking on that and how government spending and fiscal policy and monetary policy at the Federal Reserve and the other central banks may be planning for that, I believe. So anyway, more to come on future episodes on that. Go to jasonhartman.com, check out the events, the Venture Alliance event coming up, Providence, Rhode Island, Newport, Rhode Island, Fall Foliage, Mansions. These are just first-class events with my Venture Alliance Mastermind group. You can come one time as a guest and be a guest for the event without being an actual member. We'd love to have you. A little side trip to Martha's Vineyard too, and that's going to be a fantastic event. You'll be really enjoying some five-star dining, some great tours, some intimate mastermind discussions with some excellent real estate entrepreneurs from around the country and maybe even around the globe. If we have one of our non-US clients come, maybe we'll have one or two of those even. Who knows? Check that out at jasonhartman.com in the events section, and we'll look forward to talking with you on the next episode. Naresh, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Jason.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is You make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.